Imagine an entering cohort of 8 doctoral students sitting around a table in a department seminar room or laboratory conference room. They've just arrived at graduate school, and they're eager to see what their new adventure will hold for them. All of them know that the academic job market is depressed, but perhaps most are hoping for a college or university teaching job of some kind. Now let's flash forward in time. According to current statistics, 4 of the 8, 50%, will not complete the degree. Of the remaining 4 who do finish, 2 will not get academic positions and will seek jobs elsewhere. The remaining pair will get full-time teaching jobs, most likely at teaching-intensive institutions. Perhaps they'll get tenure-track assistant professorships, though the supply of those positions has been shrinking. And maybe 1 of those 2 will get a position at a research university, like the one where those 8 graduate students assembled years earlier. That's the opening to the new PhD. Our authors, a professor of English and American Studies at Fordham University, and a former professor of English, department chair, and dean at the University of Michigan, open with those chilling and perhaps quite accurate words. They go on to note that each decade seems to bring a time when the world of America academia begins a discussion about the need to change traditional PhD programs, as they are then offered by colleges and all too often endured by graduate students. The theme of today's book is that graduate education needs to change, desperately needs to change, if advanced education in America is to continue to offer some of the very best advanced education in the world. The authors pointing out that graduate students are bright, inquisitive people who deserve better than a tried and true program that most often leads to disappointment if their goal is to achieve a tenure-track position at a major university, as we just heard. Fewer and fewer graduate students are likely to achieve that goal as the years tick by, and there is no likelihood that change will come due to expected demographics. The authors point out that despite rather recent expectations for expanded employment opportunities for tenure-track professional positions due to increased college attendance that was expected, unexpected swerves in the academic world resulted in the last surge in college student growth, resulting not in more tenure-track professorships, the goal, but in a much less costly adjunct professor position, so that new PhD earners found academic jobs, but jobs that paid less and were likely temporary in nature, certainly not the goal the prognosticators expected. Surveying, and one might say deeply, the current literature on this topic, the future painted by our authors is dim for those hoping for more tenure-track professor positions anytime in the foreseeable future. Our authors' propositions for change, what to do, if you will, implement changes long called for by professional studies researched over many of the past years. Embrace the opportunities that empowered deans of graduate schools can bring about through leadership as a whole, while individual professors and individual graduate departments can and are making important changes that may well point a way forward to the rest of the academic world. It will be graduate schools writ large making positive changes that will drive necessary movement forward, our authors argue to us. It's surprising, perhaps, in some ways, that they are so interested in the bureaucratic structure of graduate schools as a way to move forward. But they believe that properly modulated, properly led, bureaucrats can change the world. And so, it ought to come as no surprise that the authors' interests are wide-ranging in other ways as well. Integrating the need to address diversity, our authors deliberately disdained making the search and embrace of diversity as a separate chapter and instead put it into every single chapter in the book. Urging graduate programs to look beyond the academy as the purpose of graduate education, especially in the arts and the sciences, which is the main thrust of today's book. Making a graduate degree a practical degree in more than medicine, law, and engineering becomes a recurring theme. And perhaps most critical and most motivational, they argue that putting the student first is what ought to be the goal of graduate education today. As they tell us, The new PhD is new because it puts students first and subordinates faculty interests. All good education does this, they continue, but is particularly important for this most personal of degrees. To the students, we say with Woody Guthrie, this land is your land, or this life is your life. And to their teachers, we say, if you give the initiative to your students, your own professional life will improve along with theirs. The new PhD is then, at its heart, a how to change it for the better guidebook, as the authors tell us in the introduction. Writing, we want you to think of the book you've begun as an instrument for change. We will explain why the PhD needs changing, but our emphasis is on how to do it. We've designed that how for multiple audiences, especially for university departments, but also for university administrations and national organizations, individual faculty members, and yes, graduate students too. Importantly, it's good to ask the question, does the new PhD achieve its purposes? Well, I'll leave that to our friends in academia, for ultimately it is they who will need to ignore, embrace, and or integrate the reforms called for in this book. Our authors are sanguine about the chances for their arguments to find a fertile ground among their colleagues, for they share with us, more than once, by saying, to allow the status quo to continue, despite study after study arguing for change, is not a real option. I realize that today's book is not likely to win a whole lot of fans who are not already agreeable to its stated goals in our greater Lafayette community, but it is a book that non-academics can find useful too, I think. After all, we're all integrated into an academic-driven community, and learning what's happening in the world of academe is something we can all do, probably all ought to do, and can all benefit from learning. They finish with what are ultimately encouraging words, writing, the initiatives of the past are themselves an education for the future. Too much sweat and treasure have been expended over the past generation to improve doctoral education for the results to be forgotten. Much that was done in the past generation can inform the work of this one. We've earlier invoked the conservatism of graduate school, they write, but so little about it has changed that we might rightly describe it as a rigid, not conservative, place. And even when we want to change, we frequently can't manage to do it. That isn't because we academics are uniquely poor change agents. Sometimes the opposite is true. The failure begins with responsibility, they write. We need to bring the responsibility to change together with the power to effect change. We must change the process by which we change, if we are to effect the reforms we need. Right now, the graduate school industrial complex has a leadership vacuum that disperses academic responsibility. But we have to take on that responsibility to the university, to our fields of study, and especially to the professional lives and futures of our doctoral students. The new PhD, they conclude, is a young movement, past its birth, but still in early adolescence, and like an adolescent, and needs to embrace a variety of experiences and experiments. Neither of us have ever been accused of shying away from stating the opinion, but we have sought in this volume to balance advice and opinions. The only option we rule out is inaction. The new PhD, How to Build a Better Graduate Education. It's available at many of our fine local public libraries and certainly at the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.